Welcome to this edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. As part of our 2024 election coverage, Delaware Public Media is offering a series of candidate conversations. We reached out to all candidates filed to run in the races for U.S. House and U.S. Senate, as well as governor, lieutenant governor, and insurance commissioner, and invited them to sit down with us. Candidates in each race are being asked about the same set of topics to allow you to get to know them and compare them. The interviews you hear here on The Green are edited for time. Full conversations are online at DelawarePublic.org. The race for lieutenant governor features four candidates seeking to replace Democrat Bethany Hall Long, who is running for governor. Today, we focus on two of the candidates, the lone Republican running, Ruth Briggs King, and one of the Democrats, Sherry Dorsey Walker. We start with Briggs King. She's making her first run for statewide office after serving 14 years in the state House of Representatives before stepping down in November 2023 when she moved out of the district she represented. Talking a little bit about the lieutenant governor's role, it's often a role that a person, it's what they make of it, right? How do you feel you could make the lieutenant governor's office consequential? Are there issues you would like to try to make your own if you're elected?
Absolutely. And I think you hit on a really good point that the lieutenant governor can have their own program of work. They may not be able to directly influence legislation by introducing it, but you can work on key initiatives. I think for me, I want to continue to focus on three things I know are very important that I have actual experience and success in. One of those is education. Being a former educator, education is a huge issue for me right now. Knowing the divide and what we have with disruptive students and how our teachers and parents and students are all feeling the pressure from that. So let's have an authentic dialogue. And the second thing for me is to address some of the issues, continuing to address issues that we have in housing in Delaware. And although housing concerns might look very different in Wilmington than they do in rural Sussex, they're very much the same. And so continuing my work in those areas and finding affordable as well as workforce housing and alternatives for those who need to move out of transitional homes. And I've done quite a few things in that area. And I think, once again, I've brought players to the table. You tell me what we need to do. Mr. Developer, what can I get you to do to develop more? And they said, remove regulatory barriers, remove the cost of development before I ever break ground. And a third thing for me is let's talk about safety in our communities, because that impacts what's going on in schools. It has a tremendous impact. So those are some things that I feel I can bring groups together. And maybe we don't need legislation. We just need like-minded people that can get it done.
I do want to delve into a couple of those issues a little bit more in a moment. But first, just talking about the role of the lieutenant governor, I did want to ask one other question on that. And that is, the lieutenant governor obviously presides over the state Senate. And in a time where we're seeing strong partisan tensions everywhere, including here in Delaware, should the lieutenant governor in that position play a role in setting and maintaining a more positive tone?
Absolutely. In my caucus, we're always told, vote your district and vote your conscience. But I think the other party has been told many times that this is our position, because we've talked with some of them on some issues. Speaker Schwarzkopf also said when they were doing my goodbye ceremony that I'd have had a lot more bills passed had I been on their side of the aisle. And I thought, how nice, but how sad, because one side doesn't have all the answers or have the best ideas. And you can see that working. The role of the lieutenant governor in the Senate is to see that all those senators who were elected to represent their district have an equal chance to do that, and to do that with dignity and respect, and not to say, I won't work any of your bills or I'm going to do that. Your job is to have discernment, fairness, and equity in how you manage the Senate.
So I do want to go back to some of the issues you mentioned earlier, and starting with affordable housing. As you noted, it's a complex issue, but one that does touch all counties in the state, all corners of the state. Can you talk a little bit more specifically where you feel the state can be most effective and have the most impact quickly in targeting one or two of these specific areas of affordable housing?
And sometimes, if I may, it's not the state, it's local ordinances. Mm-hmm. Because I've been working with a couple of gentlemen, one that wanted to start a new project in Georgetown and another new project in Laurel. Those are examples in Sussex County. Those are level one areas designated already for growth and development. And they're getting pushback, and they want them to improve all the streets that lead into where they're going to be, or require so many additional parking spaces in what I call this already developed area. Those are roadblocks and barriers. And those kind of things also increase the cost to development before they ever start. It's engineering cost. And when they present that, they say, no, we want this. And then they have more engineering cost. And so they have a lot of money invested or potentially invested before they ever can build the first unit. And those builders tell me, I can build a unit for under $200,000 if you take away some of these barriers that I must overcome, because time and engineering cost are money in a project. And ultimately, who's going to pay for that? The developer will have to pass that on. So we need to look at our local ordinance as well as the state. And we need to look at a way that tax credits from the state aren't enough. Mm-hmm. And if you're a not-for-profit that wants to build, tax credits are no value to you at all. You've got to raise those funds. And so 3 years ago, as an example, trying to find a way around some of these barriers, I had Habitat for Humanity, Sussex County Community Crisis House, and First State Action Community Action Agency come to the table in Georgetown. They all had projects they wanted to do. The town told Habitat, your model won't fit because you're zoned multi-density. Meanwhile, Crisis House wanted to do something multi-density, and we're told your lots are zoned individual and you can't fold the lines between the two. I arranged for the two, did a property swap. So Habitat for Humanity bought the lots from Crisis House, which give them leverage to do another project. And we now have four new units that meet the Habitat model have been built in Georgetown. So it's bringing these players to the table.
So let's talk a little bit now about education, which is something you also mentioned earlier. And I guess maybe a little bit more about education funding, which has been a big issue recently. You and your GOP colleagues have argued that Delaware is already spending a lot on education and not necessarily seeing the student performance results that you would like to see, or anyone would like to see. But the lawsuit over education funding equity led to a report that was released last fall on education funding. It recommended the state spend an additional $600 million to $1.1 billion. So I'm going to assume you reject that recommendation. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. For first of all, I think the thing that we must do is we must rebalance and provide equity in educational funding, because there is a huge difference, and I don't believe that your zip code should determine the funding that you get. And so in 2009, not long after I was first elected, the first time, my first full term, I served on joint finance. Mm-hmm. I was assigned to an education funding task force. We met for 18 months. They had consultants come in and said, we need to redo. I have sat on at least two of those during my tenure in 14 years, and there has never been the political will to do what needs to be done. I said, why aren't we funding equalization funds? And they said, well, representative, until we reassess, that won't work. And I said, well, then when are we going to reassess? And I was told by a Democrat leader, not as long as I'm sitting in the forum.
So having said that, what I'm hearing is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you do believe that it's time to kind of move on from the unit count system and find some kind of weighted funding system that works to address the students who have the most need.
And I have worked and fought and been successful in getting opportunity funds for separate schools too. I happen to represent, you know, a district that in Georgetown, 93% of my students were English learners. And the district was having to take from other local funds in order to supplement that. And the governor did see wisdom and then provide some additional opportunity funding. But it should be baked in the formula. It shouldn't be
That's
extra.
What I was going to say. Is that, so you're saying it's like it's not, it shouldn't be these like one-off
and
grants.
Money, and I feel very strongly that money should follow the student. Mm-hmm. And today we can have a student that's in one school district by September 30th. And by January, either because of housing or jobs or whatever, they're not there. And whoever accepts that student gets no funding for them for the rest of the year. And I had supported initiatives to do this unit count more than once a year. I realize that many districts are entrenched in that unit count and how they use it to their advantage. But I'm not sure we're past its purpose, that it's serving us well in Delaware.
When you talk about kind of not doing more spending, are you in favor of more spending on some of the things we saw this year, which is teacher salaries, paraprofessionals, even bus drivers, technology, things like that. Is that the kind of spending
those.
You would support?
Yeah. I actually supported those. I served on joint finance, supported those. We made a commitment back when Joe Moreau and I were on joint finance together years ago that we were going to increase those paras' salary, and it was going to take us 3 years to do it. That was one of the same years when they were having this battle over transportation cost, and I was holding out, and they said, what do you want? I said, I need our bus drivers. We are desperate for bus drivers, and we need to do something. So it's looking at the whole thing in the education system. Some of those need to be built in the budget and not have to come out of if the district. It's much like safety in our schools. It shouldn't be something we have to find the money for. It should be something that we're it's important that we're automatically funding.
I do want to talk a little bit about health care costs and access, because they're becoming pretty stubborn issues in this state. Delaware has one of the highest costs of care in the nation, but struggles to attract and retain providers and specialists. And we see this play out in a lot of different arenas, including cost of coverage for state employees and retirees, which the legislature and the governor dealt with a lot this past session, to dealing with an aging population in the state. We have seen some things done, as I mentioned, in the legislature, including creating a hospital cost review board. I guess the question I have for you is, what would you advocate prioritizing in terms of addressing these issues, again, as I said earlier with the housing piece, to get maybe the most impact quickly?
And first of all, and once again, this is something I've been very much of an advocate on. I think there needs to be health care and health care access for all. So one of the first things you have to look at is why can't we recruit physicians better than we are? And having been a recruiter, having been a vice president in human resources in a hospital, I can tell you that one of the stumbling blocks is sometimes our requirements in order to become certified to practice medicine in Delaware, a little more cumbersome than other. We're doing better on the interstate compact. We did during COVID. But it's harder to come to Delaware. But the second thing, when you're trying to bring in educated professionals to come to Delaware, they're going to look at the school systems. And when they see the school systems are rated C minus or D, that's a red flag for them because they want to have families. They're also impacted by the high cost of housing. If they've come out of medical school, chances are they have a lot more debt than they have assets. And so if you're bringing them to BB near the beach, this thing called Sand and Surf, and they can't find a home for under $500,000 or $600,000 because they have to live in a call response area, that's another roadblock. I think the state of Delaware was throwing some darts at hospitals because they've been prudent, they'd saved their money. They are the ones that introduced and brought residency programs to try and fill the need. They're the ones that have expanded access to walk-in clinics, ED departments out of the area because of the growing population, particularly Middletown area and Sussex County. And that is a gray wave, and that gray wave has a lot of high-dollar health care needs with them. And so to say to the hospitals that we're going to oversee your budgets when we can't even manage our own as prudently as you are seems like a punishment and a total lack of understanding of the hospitals forecasting what we need, building to try and catch up, but also for that need. It's a very complex issue. I worked in the medical community for a long time, so I understand the physician's aspect. I understand the hospital aspect, too. And I think it was really unfair of the state to want to oversee our nonprofit hospitals when they have had a failure at managing their own veterans home hospital. They've had a failure at managing the state hospital, and they've done a horrible job historically in our correctional facilities with health maintenance. They're doing a little bit better there. So I think who are you folks that don't even have this kind of expertise to tell these hospital boards, volunteer boards, know their community. The community here in Dover is different than the community at St. Francis. The western part of the county in Sussex County almost lost their only physician to deliver babies because the Medicaid funding was inadequate and they couldn't get private docs to come in. You have to know these things. And I'm just afraid that some of those folks are going to look at figures and not look at the patient.
All these things we're talking about ultimately come back to money, right? And
yes.
And one of the things you mentioned earlier is that you served on the Budget Writing Joint Finance Committee, so you're very familiar with how that process works. The outgoing Governor John Carney has taken arguably a more cautious and pragmatic approach towards spending. He's emphasized one-time spending, budget supplementals, so-called budget smoothing to set aside dollars to hedge against economic downturns. What approach would you advocate as lieutenant governor to balance spending that's needed, some of the things you talked about that need to be baked in, and fiscal responsibility.
Right. I think for number one is transparency. We've tried for a couple of years to have an inspector general position because I'm not so sure that when the joint finance allocates money to go to an agency for a purpose, that that money is being spent for that purpose. And you could might say, well, that's what the auditor's supposed to do. Not so. And we've seen where some auditors have even run into trouble when they've tried to audit DHSS. And I have seen it myself where we've allocated funds specifically, and I go in and I'm like, well, why isn't this happening? Right. We've allocated money and it's been reappropriated somewhere else. So to me, that would be a focus, is to ensure a mechanism that the where we want the money as legislators to go, that it's reaching to do the intended thing. We can say the same thing in education. We're spending a lot of dollars in educational funding. Is it getting to the classroom? I think that's where the argument is. So looking at that, I also think there's many things that are in the budget year after year that need a more close review, that maybe their time has passed. And certainly with technology, we need to be investing in smarter technology. You can see the problems they've had in the Department of Labor, where money was embezzled, where money where they can't account because they can't even audit. These are the kind of concerns in the budgeting process that we need to go back, and we need to, instead of coming in and saying, this is a door opener, this three-stack volume, we need to dig a little bit deeper. I totally agree with Governor Carney, and I'm glad he stuck to it, about the smoothing fund and investing in that, because whoever the new governor is going to be is a lot luckier than when he took and had a deficit and had to do cuts.
So in a time when there seems to be a stronger distrust of government, and perhaps more specifically in politicians, building what you said about oversight and an inspector general, there have been a lot more calls across the board, really, for transparency and accountability. What role do you feel the office of lieutenant governor and you personally can play in giving Delawareans that greater transparency and accountability that many of them are seeking?
I think just by our conversation right now, you can see that I'm sort of, and I always have been, what I consider to be very authentic. And so I may not give you the answer that you want to hear, but I'm going to give you one that I feel is honest and that you may need to hear. And so I think knowing that you have a person that says, I'll work on something, or here's what I'm doing, that there's that belief that that integrity and that character, because that's something you earn. But I think that people want to have that confidence that in you, that you'll do what you say. And it's not just that. I've always said, let the process work. Don't try to control the outcome, but let the process work. And if that means open hearings, if that means holding people accountable for the, this is supposed to be a public venue and we need public access, that you're not doing something, walking a bill instead of giving the public the chance to be heard, that you're moving something through too quickly on the last night or two nights of session. And those are the kind of things I want the people to know. I would not disenfranchise them. I would want transparency.
That's Republican candidate for governor, Ruth Briggs King. Our full conversation with her is available at DelawarePublic.org. Up next, our candidate conversation with one of the Democrats in the lieutenant governor's race, Sherry Dorsey Walker. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.